Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 7:20. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning to you. It is Wednesday, which means that we chat to Dr. Carl. He is an Australian scientist and communicator. Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Ever so peachy keen, Dr. Howard?
Peachy keen. Well, yep. Yeah, it's good as well. Dr. Carl, what can we learn about gambling in Australia?
Well, firstly, and this is very surprising, are you familiar with those machines called poker machines?
Well, I would say yes, I most certainly am.
They're called slot machines. You pull on a lever and things happen.
Yep.
Well, about half of all the poker machines on Earth are in Australia, and half of them are in New South Wales.
What?
And in Australia, the average fun gambler would gamble, say, $400 a year, maybe $10 a week, do it just for fun. But a problem gambler can gamble $12,000 a year, and often they can't do anything about it. And in fact, it's so common in Australia that the total gambling revenue is roughly 1% of our gross domestic product, and it leads to much unhappiness.
I had no idea that gambling was so popular in Australia. 50% of the world's gambling slot machines
are in Australia, and half of them are in New South Wales. And the thing is, it gives you an insight into people's behavior. I mean, you make a decision, and gambling helps you study decisions that make whether they're healthy or unhealthy, say eating food, smoking cigarettes, drinking a little bit or not. And in fact, gambling was the first ever formally recognized behavioral addiction. And in fact, it represents truly disordered decision making, because there's no substance consumed, there's no drug, and yet people have very similar symptoms to drug addiction, such as withdrawals, tolerance, you know, they have to spend a bigger bet and spend more time gambling for the same high. And then that takes us across to the smartphone use. And to some degree, on one hand, smartphones are absolutely essential in our society, but on the other hand, people use them for more than just the essential and can spend hours just diving into TikTok or Facebook or YouTube more than they need to, and they get a high, and then when they come off, they experience withdrawal. In the case of my daughter, who's studying medicine, she's just gone off all of the social media, and my son has gone totally off Google. He's just totally de-Googled himself. So there's a lot that we can learn by looking at gambling behavior and then working that out into human behavior in general.
What came first? Has the designers or the inventors of various styles of social media use, did they look into this, or is this just a coincidence, do you think?
Oh, very much so. You've got world-class psychologists working out the best way to get people thoroughly addicted to the whole social media experience. And so recently, early on, one of the things that happened when you got a text was that the phone would make a noise. And before that, the phone didn't make a noise. The text would come in, but you didn't know it.
How interesting.
And then with the smartphones, it was really easy to have it make a noise. And then the inventors of this were talking about how they were walking around San Francisco. And as they were walking around, they could hear all these little bongs coming out of people's pockets. And they suddenly realized that they had made a major change to people's behavior. And so in gambling, for example, when you're doing the slot machines, even when you lose money, they still play the same kind of music as when you win. So in a way, the losses are disguised as wins. So you might put in $10, you get back 50 cents, hooray, you've won. No, you've lost $9.50, but they lie to you. And there's very careful social engineering. I would highly recommend the video on Netflix called The Social Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And part of the downside of this whole manipulation of people is that very shortly after smartphones became universal around the year 2009, we saw a tripling in young adolescent females of both suicide and self-harm, because there was more pressure on them to match up to the beautifully made-up people that they saw on their smartphone any time of day or night. Whereas before 2009, the access to the media was regulated by the parents. No, you can't watch TV, and the TV was in the house. But now they could carry their smartphone with them and do anything they wanted without any parental supervision.
absolutely fascinating, and certainly something to be very aware of, because we're all victims of it. It's not just our kids. You know, I don't think we should be so arrogant as to think it's only our kids who are susceptible to the pings and the callings and the addiction of our smartphones, right?
Correct. And it's worthwhile just to look at how many hours you spend and then think, I'm just getting off it, and just go cold turkey for a while and see how you feel.
Interestingly, as an observant Jew, I am Shabbat observant, which means for 25 hours starting at Friday evening sunset until Saturday night, I put my phone away, as does my whole family. And it's the most amazing and liberating 25 hours, because nobody sits at the table or sits in having a conversation with their cell phones there. And it just means that you engage properly. It isn't always easy, but it's very, very valuable.
Yes, my son and his friends came up with a good behavior early on. If you take your phone with you to the restaurant when they all got together, but the first person to look at their phone in the company of other people would pay for the cost of the meal for everybody else.
Oh gosh, I would be so poor. So poor, yes. Would be me. It is 7:27. Are we sleeping less than we used to?
Unfortunately, that does seem to be the case. We're not sure why, but on various surveys carried out in America and in Europe, it does seem we find that we're having an increase in the percentage of people sleeping fewer than 6 hours a night. More of them, and a decrease in those sleeping more than 7 hours. But and we need our sleep, and the sleep can be broken up either by you've got a medical condition such as sleep apnea, which breaks up your sleep into fragments, or you might have something wrong with your different stages of sleep, or you might just be working too hard. And I remember when I was a kid, it was possible for a person to run a family on the wages earned by working either 37 and a half hours a week if you were a blue collar or trade worker, 40 hours a week, or 37 and a half hours a week if you're a white collar worker. And that was it. And with that, there were no more extra hours of work. You were off. And you could buy a house with that and a car and run a family and maybe even take a holiday once a year. Nowadays, people are working longer. The useful income is less. Sure, the stupid toys are cheaper, like the TVs. But the important stuff like education, housing, medical care, that has become more expensive. And so people are working longer hours and they don't have the time to enjoy their lives.
Absolutely incredible. And finally, in the little time we have left, 400 illuminated drones arranged themselves into a square machine-readable QR code. Wow, this sounds so cool.
It's bizarre. So this happened in Austin in Texas, and 400 of these illuminated drones rose into the sky and formed themselves into a square 100 meters by 100 meters, and then they were a QR code in the sky. And if you just happen to take a photograph of it with your camera on your phone, and you lift up your phone, and then suddenly it would recognize the QR code and then take you to a trailer for a new science fiction series on TV.
Absolutely incredible. It's about to go 7:30. Dr. Cole, thank you as always.